The next case is 05-625, Daniel and Deborah Dirksen versus Greene County Board of Revision. Mr. Gilder.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I believe that the Board of Tax Appeals, in sustaining the county auditor's revocation of CAUV status in this case, is contrary to the plain language contained in the statute that defines land exclusively used for agricultural purposes. That statute, as it applies to parcels of land in excess of 10 acres, states that land used exclusively for agricultural purposes means land devoted exclusively to the commercial production of field crops or the growth of timber for a non-commercial purpose if the land upon which the timber is grown is otherwise devoted exclusively to agricultural uses. The property in question consists entirely of timber grown for a non-commercial purpose and a crop field. And the plain language of the statute supports this determination. Nevertheless, the Board of Tax Appeals, and I see no ambiguity in those words.
Counsel, what about the requirement of a minimum income produced by the crop or the acreage of $2,500? And the fact, I guess it's uncontroverted here, that the taxpayers earned $300 from this acreage.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe in that portion, and I'm sure you already know that portion of the statute referring to the minimum income of $2,500 is contained in the definition of land used exclusively for agricultural purposes that is less than 10 acres. Now, to get to that portion of the definition in this case, you have to break this 26-acre piece of land into two pieces. And in doing so, I think that you are violating, not you, but you, anyone who would do that would be violating the language, the clear language contained in the statute, which says contiguous to or part of. Also, I think that you would be violating what I believe is the legislative intent behind the statute.
So, counsel, would your argument be that it doesn't matter what the size of the acreage is that is being tilled, as long as it's contiguous or part of the parcel of, with a treed lot, I mean a treed area? If this was 1 acre, if this was a half acre, would you be here?
Yes, I would be, Your Honor. I believe the way the statute is written, that's exactly how it is read and how it should be applied. And to have an aversion to that outcome, you would have to determine that non-commercial timber shouldn't be accorded any favorable treatment under our tax statutes. And yet, it clearly does get some favorable treatment in the statute. It was added in 93, and even our Ohio Constitution provides for the complete tax exemption of timberlands, forest lands, whereas agricultural uses in the sense that you would commonly think of farming is only accorded a reduction in value. So I don't think there's anything wrong with there being a tax break for the growth of non-commercial timber. I think that's what the legislature's intended. If you flip the analysis that you gave and you applied the Board of Tax Appeals determination that non-commercial timber should only be accorded CAUV treatment when it's an incidental growth of it. For instance, a stand of trees utilized as a windbreak next to a farm field is what the BTA decision said. If you're looking only for that to be acceptable, then if we had a 100-acre parcel of land and 80 acres were used for crop fields and 20 acres were used for non-commercial timber, I submit that that 20-acre portion would not be an incidental portion, and therefore that portion under the BTA's decision wouldn't be accorded CAUV status. I think that contradicts the language in the statute. Prior to 1993, when the non-commercial timber language was added to this statute, the Board of Tax Appeals applied the primary purpose test. And the primary purpose test allowed CAUV property, or actually redefined exclusively used for agricultural purposes to mean primarily used for agricultural purposes, and it allowed property that would otherwise qualify for CAUV status to have an incidental non-conforming use. And in other words, you could have had an incidental growth of non-commercial timber on this property prior to 1993. And since that was already allowed, why would the legislature amend the statute in question and add that you can grow non-commercial timber as long as the remaining portions of the land are used exclusively for agricultural purposes? There would have been no need to add the language. The courts and the law of Ohio already allowed such a use. I believe they were making it clear that they intended for these larger sections that border these farm fields to be accorded the same treatment, to prevent the farmers from having to break their land up into many parcels and sell those that they cannot farm. So I don't think reading and applying what appears to me to be the plain language of the statute violates any sense of taxation fairness any more than allowing a reduction in value for crop fields. So the BTA's decision not only appears to violate a plain reading of the statute, but it also appears to violate the legislative intent due to the chronology.
Counsel, is this land located someplace where the woodlot becomes valuable because of its location? Because, I mean, ordinarily a woodlot wouldn't command much money, and you describe this, I think, as having a pretty steep embankment and all of that. Is that the financial problem underlying this?
It is one of them, Your Honor. It is. The bank drops 115 feet. The property on the west side of the property is this 5-acre.
Yeah, I understand that, but I mean, why is the woods otherwise valuable?
The woods otherwise may not be that valuable. It has been described by the auditor as being the county auditor or the Board of Education, excuse me, as being on a scenic, overlooking a scenic view of the river. But I don't think it otherwise would be that valuable.
I guess I'm just curious. It isn't involved, I don't think, in the legal question here at all. But CAUV would take, that's driven, the value is driven by the production capabilities of the land. A woodlot doesn't have much in that regard, and it would presumably not be valued maybe even as high as a CAUV value on farmland.
You would think that, but in this particular case, the county auditor has valued it greatly in excess of the agricultural property and has charged the recoupment fee
So what's driving, I mean, is there housing nearby? I mean, is this?
Yes, Your Honor, there's housing nearby. There's housing, in fact, not immediately surrounding the property, but on one side immediately and encroaching from the other
side. So the county auditor's looking at this and saying, gee, you could put houses out there on this hillside, and so it's valuable. Is that what's?
That's what I believe, although I do think it would be difficult to put houses there. And that also gets to the fundamental purpose of the CAUV statute, to protect farms from the encroaching from encroaching communities and housing divisions that would increase the value of the property beyond that which they could pay the tax on.
Counselor, did the taxpayers make any effort to have the property devalued by the county auditor, take a look at the assessment and make some modifications?
At this time, they have not. There was a recoupment fee charged, and it was the taxpayer's position that was not proper. If at the end of the day, if this court rules or upholds the BTA's decision, that would be the taxpayer's next step. But to take that route as a resolution of this case would require paying of the recoupment fees and proceeding to argue over the value of the property. When we believe that it qualifies under the CAUV program to begin with. So I see no reason for the resistance to non-commercial timber that we have received from the county auditor and the Board of Tax Appeals. That language was specifically added to the statute, no different than crop fields were. And I submit for these reasons that the Board of Tax Appeals decision is in error and ask that this court overrule that decision.
Thank you, Mr. Gildner.
Thank you.
Mr. Gorey.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, thank you. My name is James Gorey, and I do represent the Greene County Auditor. If I might first answer Justice Pfeiffer's question, I was curious about the difference in the value between the woodland at its true value in money and what the woodland was worth under the current agricultural use valuation, the CAUV. So I did ask the county auditor to send me those documents. There's little difference. The land, the 26 acres of woodland, does not have a much higher value, market value, than it did as a result of the application of the CAUV, counting the recoupment charges and taxes for the next 5 years. The attorney's fees in this case will exceed the amount of money that was involved, because the land simply, there wasn't a great difference in the value. We of course think the BTA properly interpreted 5713.30 in this case. We all understand that the 25 acres of woods does not qualify for the CAUV by itself. It's not entitled, never was entitled. It has to be bootstrapped into the program, and it has to be bootstrapped in by virtue of the language of 5713.30. And that language, which was addressed in the decision in the briefs, is that the woodland can qualify for the CAUV if and only if it is part of a parcel that is otherwise devoted exclusively to agricultural use. Devoted exclusively to agricultural use is not only the statutory definition, it is also the constitutional definition of what qualifies for.
What's the definition of a parcel?
We actually consider a parcel to be anything. An identifiable tract of land, but...
Here I presume the entire...
The entire 26 acres
is
one parcel.
And that's the only holding of this taxpayer.
There were two other parcels upon which three houses were located. There were about 2 acres and 3 acres, and those were kind of closer to the
but
bluff.
But it's the only... farmland.
That is the only farmland. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Because parcel could be, and seems to me frequently is, when you see these CAUV things, whatever is reflected on the deeds.
It's whatever is reflected on the deeds.
So the auditor tends to treat parcel as, you know, if it's various descriptions, even though it might all look, if you drove around it, as one piece.
And the auditors will even lump adjacent parcels together qualify. So if you have 3 acres here and 7 acres there, you don't meet the 10 acre test. Well, we'll lump them together and give you CAUV on both if they're adjacent. I apply a one farm rule. If you're farming it as one farm, might be across the street, you know, nonetheless, we'll count it as one. Anyway, the BTA addressed the critical statutory language. Is the woodland otherwise part of a parcel that otherwise is devoted exclusively to agricultural use? And the answer to that is clearly no. The appellants have a 5 acre tract of land that's farmed by the adjacent farmer. There's no dispute, that's 5 acres. And there is no other farmland. There's nothing else being farmed. If you apply the statutory definition to the words in the statute, otherwise devoted exclusively to agricultural use, you must have 10 acres, and the opponents don't have 10 acres. If you have less than 10 acres, you must meet the $2,500 annual income test, and 5 acres of hay or whatever this was. It didn't meet the $2,500. That's not in dispute either. So since the appellants have no land that otherwise qualifies for the agricultural use, they can't bootstrap 25 acres of woods in. If you would accept the appellant's arguments, then you could have 50 acres of woodland, you could have 100 acres of woodland, and you could have a 10 by 3 vegetable garden, 30 square feet. An appellant's position is that I've got vegetables growing on the land. Now, it doesn't have to qualify. That part of the land doesn't have to qualify for the CAUV. It doesn't have to meet the definition of being devoted exclusively to agricultural use, but it is vegetables, and 571330 refers to vegetables. So the woodland would be entitled to the CAUV, and you have two non-conforming uses being put together, and as a result, you get CAUV on the woodland. And that's clearly not, in our opinion, what the General Assembly intended, and that is indeed what statute.
Council, it seems that there are two, you've got competing ways to read this plain language of a statute as to, and you're making a good argument as to why yours is the more sensible. It would also seem in the mix would be the implications for woodlots scattered around this state. And so for woodlots that are in areas that are hard to reach or not very populated, de minimis in value, but a woodlot that is near an urban area could be extremely valuable if you consider its potential for home sites or that kind of thing. And so the implication here of deciding this case could be to essentially drive woodlots near urban areas into development, wouldn't it?
Mr. Justice, my answer would be that since the very beginning of the CAUV program, woodlots, woodland, woods, like trees in my backyard, do not qualify and never have qualified for the CAUV. So that's why the 25 acres never qualified for the CAUV by itself. It's got to be bootstrapped into an adjacent farming tract. And so my answer would be Yes, some woodland in urban areas can have significant values. This woodland doesn't, but certainly some can. And my answer to your question would be that if you own that property, you may have to pay higher taxes on it because you're not entitled to the CAUV unless you have an active timber management program on that. You get the CAUV on woodland if you have an active timber management program and can prove that you are actually growing the woods for timber. Timber's a crop. It's entitled to the CAUV. So we do have a lot of woodland that has the CAUV because there are timber management programs activities taking place on that woodland. It's just not, it's just the case that those are not taking place on the appellant's property. They're not interested in cutting down any trees. I mean, it's a nice site.
Your position would be different, however, if they were receiving $2,500 instead of $300 for the farming of this five-acre parcel. Am I right?
Spilled the water twice now. I apologize. Our position would be that if they had adjacent farmland that was either 10 acres or met the $2,500 income test, then we'd be caught. They'd have the CAUV and we wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
We're just trying. It's easy to get on, and it was very easy to get on the CAUV program at the outset. And I think you've had some cases where counties have gone, tried to police the program. Auditors don't have a lot of staff to do on-site inspections of every property on CAUV. So Greene County, for instance, went through a program started about 5 years ago where they actually looked at each CAUV program. So, yeah, in that case, Mr. Justice, they would be entitled to the CAUV. That's the legislative determination, and we follow that.
Thank you.
The other issue, and if I may take a moment, we do not accept the notion that the woodland, the 25 acres, is devoted to the growth of timber for non-commercial purpose. Our position is that it is not being used to grow the crop of timber. Now, if that's the case, then it wouldn't be entitled to the CAUV, even if you could bootstrap it in under 571330. Woodland is, as I indicated in answer to Justice Pfeiffer's question, woodland is simply not entitled to the CAUV. You have to be growing the crop of timber. I understand that the word timber is used to, can be applied to growing trees, to the tree itself, like broccoli. I mean, you can apply that word to the plant. But in another context, you might have some trees in your backyard and you might loosely say, I have timber. Under the Constitution and under the statutes, we're talking about an agricultural use of property, and simply growing trees is not an agricultural use of property. We do have a forestry land tax exemption, and you can get that for trees, but you can't get the CAUV for simply growing trees. So there's no evidence in this case that there's any timbering activities going on. There's no evidence that the appellants are using the land for the growth of timber as a crop. It is simply woodland, wild, natural. The trees are like trees in my backyard. I don't have timber. I don't think the appellants have timber either. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gorey. Mr. Gilner, you saved about 3.5 minutes of your time.
I would simply add, you've heard the statement that these trees aren't timber. Timber is to be cut down and used in building. I think the legislature makes a distinction between that type of tree and the type of a tree that won't be cut down and used in a building when it states used for commercial purposes and non-commercial purposes. This language was added in 1993. It strains the imagination to think of what non-commercial purpose you would grow trees to cut them down and turn them into lumber for. Not that many people build their own homes and their own barns. If you were doing that with a tree, it would be to sell it, most likely. So, and you hear then that timber is not an agricultural use. And I disagree with that. I think that the legislature has stated that it is, that it does have implications in the agricultural community.
Well, counsel, I'm not sure what distinction you're arguing about here, but I suppose the close question would be if on this woodlot the owners brought in a professional forester to evaluate the timber periodically and tell them which trees need to be cut down because they're going to become hollow trees and valueless for timber purposes, and that if they did that on a periodic basis, even though they're not out there aggressively planting some kind of timber, some kind of tree that grows fast and you can cut down in short order, that might be a factual argument, but apparently you don't have that going on here at all. Your client's happy to have the trees grow old and fall down when they go bad.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think to take the other course and to have someone come in, an expert, and look at the trees and tell you which ones to cut down, I think if you were applying for a forestry exemption, that would be important. But here, the legislature specifically added this language to the CAUV statute. And at a time when the incidental growth of non-commercial timber was already acceptable under Ohio law, I can only reach one conclusion, and that is they intended for farmers or anyone growing crops, essentially, to not have to include or to be able to include these trees under the CAUV program. It would have been very simple for the legislature to insert the word incidental growth of non-commercial trees in the statute.
Although Mr. Gildner did it not after giving the broad exemption or the broad categorization of non-commercial timber, there was an additional amendment then that talked about the land on which the timber being grown is contiguous to or part of the parcel that is exclusively devoted to agricultural use. So didn't that really occur? I mean, the legislature, the General Assembly, after it gave the broad categorization, then came in and narrowed it further with that language.
It did, but it didn't eliminate it from the language. And it could have said, if it would have left the words "or part of" out, and we were separating the non-commercial timber from the other traditional agricultural uses, as the BTA has done here, and if that growing of crops, for instance, did satisfy the statute, well, then the timberland, the non-commercial timberland, is contiguous to that. So it would qualify. There would never be a purpose, excuse me, for inserting "or a part of" that part of the statute. If we're going to always separate the non-commercial timber from the rest, then it will always be contiguous too. And either the traditional use, conforming use parcel will qualify or it won't, and the non-commercial timber parcel is tied to the fate of that parcel. It'll always be contiguous. They could have left those words out and had the same exact outcome that we're reaching here, yet they didn't. And I think that we have to assume that they inserted that language for a reason. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gildner. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.